Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name is Nigel Jones and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's edition of Bodcast. The topic we're going to be looking at today is to do with young dentists and their career paths and what influences their choices for their futures. And I'm joined by Petros Milonis, who's going to explore this from his perspective as someone that's at the early stages of their career. I think that might be one way of putting it. Actually, how would you describe it, Petros?
Well, hello everybody. So I'm now 5 years post-graduation. I graduated from Birmingham in 2012. And after completing foundation training in the Birmingham area, I've conducted 3 DCT posts, one in restorative oral surgery or medicine, the second year in restorative proper, and the third year in academic restorative dentistry and in academic oral maxillofacial surgery. I'm now conducting my PhD at King's College London Dental Institute, and my PhD is on early erosion and tooth wear. I also work within private practice, doing general dentistry and taking referrals on a Saturday, as well as working out about in the NHS during the week in London.
Okay. And out of interest, when you were, say, an undergraduate, did you, at that stage, know what you wanted to do? Had you mapped out that kind of path for yourself?
I'll be honest, I'm kind of dare I say, a unique individual. I had it mapped out for the next 10, 15 years. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I had a role model in mind who used to train me and was one of the most respected dentists in the world in his particular field. And I knew I wanted to do something similar because I loved teaching. I'd had some experience in teaching the younger years below me as a dental undergraduate. And I loved the dentistry aspect. I loved talking to patients. And also, I loved dabbling into research as an undergraduate. I knew that ultimately the career path that I wanted was in academic restorative dentistry. That was the passion I had as an undergraduate. And I essentially just asked lots of questions. What did I need to do? How do I get to that end point? And then I backtracked. So I knew I wanted to be a sort of senior lecturer type, you know, sort of professor type role within restorative dentistry. And so I asked my professors who were teaching me, what do they do? And so I just noted them down, and I kind of mapped out very generally what I wanted to do, from foundation training, which DCT jobs to go for and aim for, and then eventually, where would I do a PhD, how do I do that? So I had a sort of general understanding of what I wanted to do, and this is the direction I wanted to go.
Oh, I'm very impressed. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, so the fact that you knew then, 10 or 15 years, what was likely to unfold, or you hoped to unfold.
Well, it makes a massive difference. Because I've met a lot of students younger than me who ask me for help and assistance, and they say to me, okay, Petros, I obviously don't want to copy exactly what you've done, but I want to go down roughly that pathway to be a restorative specialist, for example. And they say to me, okay, but how do I get there? Well, the problem is, if I don't know what they want to do when they're finished, it's difficult to know how to then advise them. So a lot of them, they know what they want to be a specialist, but do they want to be a specialist in hospital or in the private sector? Two completely different beasts. Ultimately, if you want to be in the hospital dentistry setting, you need to be doing the DCT posts to allow you to have the CV and the skill sets to then apply for specialty training. If, however, you want to be a private specialist, again, a similar pathway is necessary, but your outcome will be different. You're not working in a dental hospital, you're working in a practice setting. So to my colleagues that are younger than me, that may not know what they want in their careers, they need to really sit down and think, where do they see themselves at least within 5 years, and then plan backwards. So you start with the end point in mind and you work backwards. If you know what you want to do, then 10 years, roughly, what are you going to do in 10 years, then you can backtrack. It makes your life a lot easier and a lot less stressful, because at least you know the hoops that you need to jump through to get to the end point. It's difficult to be floundering and dilly-dallying because you don't know what your next job's going to be. You don't know whether you'll have that employment, you don't know what you're going to be earning, you don't know when to raise a family, etc. So if you have some sort of structure, it makes your life a lot simpler.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm a big fan of Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. One of the habits is begin with the end in mind.
Yes.
And that's the sort of thing that's kind of easy to say, trips off the tongue, but yes, not so easy to do, and it's admirable that you've done it.
It's funny, people say to me, oh yeah, Petros, but you're, you know, at that very top of the pedestal, you've done every job you wanted to do, and you've got everything, how do I do that? Well, I wasn't the best thing since sliced bread, I just asked lots of questions and worked hard. I had to do well in the interviews to get the positions I needed, but I knew what to target and who to ask questions of. So a lot of my colleagues may think that what I've done is unattainable. It's entirely nonsense. There are plenty of people like me who have gone through different pathways, but have ended up where I am in their respective specialities. So it can be done. You just have to ask lots of questions and don't be sure to say I don't know.
So when you're having those kind of conversations with your younger colleagues, what sort of things are they thinking about in terms of the options? I know you referred specifically to someone that had maybe an interest in specialism, but presumably you're having conversations with people who are thinking, do I want to go into general practice? Do I want to work in the NHS? What sort of things are important to them at the moment?
For them, at the time that they're speaking to me, they're not really focusing on their futures, which is a big mistake. Because if they want to know what they're going to do next, I need to know at least roughly what they want to do in their careers. Because otherwise, how do you know how to plan for the next job or the job after? A lot of the dentists that I've been speaking to, again, unfortunately, may not even know what options are available to them. They think it's either hospital, but they don't know what in hospital, because they're different avenues from hospital, and they don't know what's available to them in practice. They think, oh, you're going to stay in practice only, and that's it for 50-odd years until you retire. So there's a general ignorance amongst my younger cohort, and that's no particular fault of any dental institute or anything like that at all. It's purely down to the individual to want to seek out the knowledge that they want for the career path that they are interested in. If they don't know, they should simply ask.
And you mentioned about sort of going into practice and retiring in 50 years' time. You could spend the entire career as an associate, or you could aspire to become a practice owner at some point. Are you finding that same aspiration for practice ownership exists amongst the younger?
See, it's funny. I'm of a different generation to the cohort I'm currently teaching, 5+ years younger than me. So of my generation, we still do have the entrepreneurial or more business-minded individuals, especially my cohort, in my year group, back during my undergraduate teaching days, who have then now gone on to own their own practices. Now, admittedly for them, they were of the ilk that had either the dad or the brother or whoever to help them. However, they still had that instinct to want to own something, and as a result, they got what they wanted. Now, the current generation that I'm teaching, by the time they get to the point where they might be able to then think about owning a practice, it's going to be a lot more difficult. Banks may not be lending as much. They aren't lending as much now in 2017. Goodness knows what happens in 2020 plus. We don't know. So my understanding is, unfortunately, they're going to have a bitter pill to swallow in terms of reality. If they want to own a practice, it might be slightly out of the younger generation's reach, unless there is someone else to help them financially and also to guide them through the process of doing so.
I mean, a lot of the statistics that are coming out are pointing to a trend of declining practice ownership, aren't they? Fewer practice owners. So is that consistent with what you're...
That kind of makes sense. So unfortunately, with the number of regulations available, you have the unfortunate situation where some owners earn less than the associate, because the associate simply comes in, does the job, goes home, and pays the principal 40-50 whatever percentage that they've agreed of the fees. So there are some individuals that don't want the hassle of having to own a practice, to run a business, to pay wages, to sort disputes, to have to deal with the CQC, and actually just want a comfortable life. But that's down to the individual themselves as to how they perceive themselves in their lives. If they want an easy life, for a lot of individuals, then they just want to settle for the bog standard GDP associate pathway. If, however, they're a bit more fiery and driven, they might want to then take on the stress of owning a practice. But again, I found more with the people I've been teaching and talking to, there is sort of a generational shift towards wanting more easy life, but then again, that's just a broad generalisation.
Well, but it's a generalisation that's often applied to the millennial generation, isn't it? Where they say that actually, and I think they get mislabeled occasionally as being lazy. Actually, I think they've just got a better sense of balance and an understanding about what's important.
And I'll say this, Adam, they know how to ask lots of questions.
Yeah.
Which is both good and bad. A lot of the current new generation, well, the millennial generation, seem to ask questions which, had they done a little bit more research, may not be necessary to ask. However, at least they're asking the questions and not thinking they know everything.
Well, that's suitably curious, and I think that's a really important thing to have, rather than just allow things to happen to you, which I think... you know, people have sort of ended up in their career paths by default sometimes rather than by design.
A very big no-no, because you might end up in a dead end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which can really fit you.
And what I mean, that's quite interesting. You were talking a lot then earlier about that, the hassle of being a practice owner. Is that the perception, do you think, of the newer dentists into the profession, that actually it's a very complex job? You mentioned things like, well, regulation, I guess employment law, all these sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, the experiences are born out of two types of practice owner: those who are sort of, you know, 50, 60 later on in life and now are retiring and are glad to be leaving, versus those who are sort of 30 to 50 who have just bought the practice. So an individual I've been chatting to has said, okay, I've realised what the regulations are, I know what I've been getting myself into, and I've calculated that risk accordingly, and they're willing to then take on that stress because they know that's what was expected. There are others, however, who may not have known exactly the extent to which practice ownership is difficult and may therefore land themselves in the water, but not knowing. To me, it's just about knowing what to expect and knowing how to go about owning the practice. And there should be a little bit more leadership for individuals like myself, if I ever wanted to. I'm not going to, but if I wanted to, there is no one for me to turn to for help. If I wanted, you know, basic box standard advice, which I would consider to be simple questions, in order to be able to say, even have a mentor to help me in this regard. So again, to answer the question, it depends really on the individuals themselves. Are they prepared to take on the risk? Are the individuals to have that sort of personality to be able to cope with it? So I'm seeing a lot more of the younger generation who physically just don't care, don't want that.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess for a lot of those, there's the opportunity to work in a corporate, there's the opportunity to, as you say, go into secondary care.
Yeah.
What do you see the pros and cons of both of those potential routes?
So I work in both, which is unique, and I've seen working in corporate, again, is entirely dependent on the corporate. Some corporates are excellent. The one I work for, they've given me exactly what I wanted, they've bought the instruments I need, they've really supported me, they've offered me the opportunity to then expand other dentists within our corporate to use my skill sets and basis of the stuff that I've learned in my past experiences, if I so chose. Other corporates may be more prescriptive, they may be more restrictive as well, and they may offer, those particular corporates may offer a negative experience of dentistry. So it entirely depends on who is the leader, who's running the ship, and also depends on you as an individual within that, the constraints within which you find yourself. In the secondary care setting, that's also a different kettle of fish with its own stresses and rigors. Within the secondary care setting, you'll be going through dental core training years 1, 2, and 3, ultimately with the specialist training pathway as your endpoint to then train as a consultant or a specialist. The problem being, at DCT1 level, you need to know what your speciality is going to be in the 3 years' time when you get to that point that you'll be applying for, so that you can then train yourself up to do the audits, the research, and other components which no one will tell you about until you start your job, that you need to really stress over to make sure you complete as you go through a DCT training pathway. So unfortunately, even the hospital training route is not as, whilst it is clear-cut, it's not as, shall we say, defined as to what you need to do. People won't spoon-feed you, unlike at undergraduate level, to varying levels, and it can be more stressful than it is just working in general practice, where you don't have any of those bothers and stresses. You see your patients from 9 to 5 or beyond, and that's what you do. In a hospital setting, completely different kind of fish. If you get to the end point, I've seen this happen before, where someone reaches a DCT3 level, there are no other hospital training posts for you to get after DCT3. It's capped. You either have to go back to practice, or you find a speciality dental post, which are gold dust, in a dental institute, or you get an STL training post, and that's entirely dependent on whether they're available or not. So there are, so long as an individual knows that there is potential failure at the end of that DCT pathway, they should not just simply jump into any one of those career pathways. They both have their pros and cons. And so long as they have spoken to individuals who, such as myself, have already gone down that pathway, and they know exactly what's in store for them, then they should go with whatever they consider to be right for them.
Okay. So you mentioned right at the start of this conversation about having mapped out your 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
So that's only the first part of your career. How do you see the second part of your career panning out?
So, if I end up getting what I want, which is hopefully clinical education or restorative as a specialist, then ultimately my career will be dependent on the institution I work for. So a clinical lecturer is normative. Their job description isn't told as suited to the needs of the institution. If I work at Guy's or Birmingham or Leeds, wherever, if they want me to be an individual or research and some teaching focused, absolutely fine. If I would want me to be more clinical and less research and more teaching, it's entirely down to the individual institution. For me, I would like a small sort of trifecta in my career, a bit of research, and a bit of teaching. For me, I can't do too much of one or the other. I'll get bored, and that's just the nature of who I am as an individual, I like variety. So hopefully within my career, I'd like to be the individual who is seen as an expert within tooth care, that's what my PhD is on, and on denture care and hygiene, which is the work I've been doing with GlaxoSmithKline as the research marketing consultant, working with their global team. And hopefully that's where I see my career going down as being the expert in those two fields, whilst doing clinical restorative dentistry and teaching on the national and international level.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Petros. Really appreciated your time today. I mean, it sounds like, actually, I guess the key message is put some thought into where you want to be 10, 15 years down the line and ask questions. Be curious.
Ask lots of questions. Have at least a roadmap. Be prepared for failure, which is one of the biggest things I learned during DCT. Things won't go your way, and you need to have a plan B and plan C. Perhaps plan B.
Excellent. Well, on that note, thank you very much, Petros. It's been a pleasure.